WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Wendy Gillette in New York. A jury found Idaho mom Lori Vallow Daybell guilty on all counts, including murdering her two children. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson says the testimony of Daybell's surviving child was powerful.
He said, and we heard the jailhouse calls, where he said, basically, you killed my younger siblings. I can't believe you did this. I never would have believed it, but now I do.
Title 42 ended at midnight. CBS's Nicole Skanga reports from the southern border on the Biden administration's new immigration policy.
Under the policy now in effect, migrants cannot gain asylum without first applying for it in another country. Those caught crossing illegally face a five-year ban and possible criminal charges. Sister Norma Pimentel runs Catholic Charities, one of the biggest nonprofit migrant shelters in Texas.
I care about the families and making sure that they're treated with dignity and respect.
She says the policy change is making it difficult for migrants to know what to expect.
A 17-year-old migrant child from Honduras who arrived in the U.S. without a parent or guardian has died in federal custody in Florida, U.S. officials confirmed today.
Marine veteran Daniel Penny made his first court appearance. He allegedly applied a fatal chokehold to New York City subway passenger Jordan Neely. CBS's Michael George has more.
After leaving the police station in handcuffs, Penny appeared in court, where he was released on bond. His attorneys say he never meant to kill Neely and that he risked his life to protect others. If found guilty of manslaughter, he could face 15 years in prison.
General Motors is recalling almost a million sport utility vehicles in the U.S. The driver's airbag inflator in the affected vehicles may explode during deployment. GM learned about the issue because of a crash involving a 2017 Chevy Traverse in which the inflator ruptured during deployment. A federal report was released that says an alarm went off on a Norfolk Southern freight train shortly before it derailed near Newcastle, Pennsylvania, Wednesday night. CBS's Christopher Cruz.
The National Transportation Safety Board says the alarm came from a hot bearing detector. The derailment of nine train cars happened about 20 miles from the site of an early February incident in East Palestine, Ohio. Then, a Norfolk Southern operated train with cars carrying toxic vinyl chloride and other hazardous chemicals went off the tracks. The contents spilled and caught fire.
A deal to buy the Washington Commanders is final. The sale price, a record $6 billion. The stock markets finished down. The Dow finished 8 points lower. The S&P 500 dropped six. This is CBS News.
Find your next great hire with Indeed. Their hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
When snack time rolls around, don't settle for the same old. Spice it up with Emmanuel's Mix. Imagine this. Corn rice cereal, pretzels, and mammoth pecans, plus a unique coating that perfectly melts sweet and salty. Emmanuel's Mix Spicy Blend even won first place in the Grand Champion Eats and Treats competition at the Wisconsin State Fair. Now that's tasty. A proud member of Something Special from Wisconsin and served on the sweet level of Fiserv Forum. Emmanuel's Mix. Log on to emmanuelsmix.com. That's emmanuelsmix.com. And get snacking.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
The four most dreaded words. My computer is down. Oh boy, that bites. Remain sane. PC it back together. We'll fix the pain. Rated number one PC doctor in Southeast Wisconsin. Great service, great rates, and fast service with no trip charge. Experts with PCs, laptops, network servers, protection, backups, and can even help you remotely. Click PCitBack.com or call us at 262-706-3235. That's 262-706-3235. Remain sane. We fix the pain.
Welcome to Mount Pleasant in Racine County, your next vacation and business destination. Just 30 miles south of Milwaukee and 60 miles north of Chicago, Mount Pleasant offers scenic parks, an outstanding hiking and biking trail system, and plenty of dining, entertainment, and shopping options. But Mount Pleasant also offers endless opportunities for economic growth, making it the perfect place to establish your company. Help celebrate the sixth season grand opening of the Franksville Craft Beer Garden on May 19th. Log on, enjoymtpleasant.org. Real Chili's been serving up mouth-watering goodness to the people of Milwaukee since 1931. Their famous secret award-winning chili recipe is the same as it was back then and a local treasure. From lunch to dinner to late-night breakfast, Real Chili has you covered. And now you can bring the Real Chili to your next party, tailgate, wedding, or office gathering with their unbeatable catering options. And don't forget about their Real Love Party Packs, perfect for small groups, and pick up from their two convenient locations, downtown Milwaukee and near Marquette University campus. Visit them at realchili.com. That's realchili.com.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Hey, welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Clinic, honoring health and tradition.
Hey, Zoe, we got a jam-packed show today here on Native Roots Radio. We have Connie Walker, who's a podcaster, journalist, who I really was able to keen in on when she did the documentary Finding Cleo, which was very emotional and very intense podcast.
Yeah, I think it's one of the most well-done podcasts, true crime podcasts, I'd say investigatory journalism that I've ever heard, just because she does such a good job of, I don't know, maintaining the integrity of the story and not getting lost in the weeds with like leads or anything. She just keeps it so true to what the family wants to find out about their relative. And there's just so much heart in her work. It's really, really incredible to see, you know, another Native woman doing that type of work and getting credit and, you know, the acknowledgement she deserves for it.
Wow, really good points. Really good points. And Connie Walker, and she's going to be talking about her latest project, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's. And you can hear that on Spotify exclusively. So we just want to let people know. And it's free, too. So you can get on Spotify. You don't have to pay for the service. You just have to be on their platform. So that's pretty exciting. Also, we got some news here, and I know I'd really like to talk to you just about this in the first segment, Zoe, but I'm going to say there's a new report that outlines steps for the University of Minnesota to repair its relationships with tribes. The U stopped shy of saying whether it would adopt the report's recommendation or not. So, Zoe, do you want to fill our listening audience in some of this, and I'll jump in with you.
Yeah, so this report is a 554-page document that's coming from the Truth Project. And the Truth is short for Towards Recognition and University Tribal Healing. This project was started back in 2020 when the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council issued two executive orders, one calling on the university to return Indigenous human remains, and another calling on it to fulfill its obligations to the 11 tribal nations in Minnesota. You can actually find the letter that the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council wrote to the U of M. It's an open letter. You can read it. It's very well done. And I think it just really highlights, you know, I feel like they almost did too much of the work for the U of M, like by really outlining exactly what they need to do, which is important that the U of M, of course, understands that. But it's just, it's hard to always see, you know, Indigenous nations having to kind of do the work to fix the problem that the oppressor created for them. I guess that's kind of my, I guess my opinion on it. But this is a really, really huge report. I mean, again, over 500 pages. So I hope that there's lots to come from this. I think if I've read correctly, Robert, they're still waiting on the U of M to make comments. I mean, it did just come out recently, right?
And I think they just, the article in the Star and Trib just said that they were just shy of recognizing it. So in other words, they probably have the report and they're not willing to maybe possibly say, yes, we did a wrong thing. You know, part of the history that they found out, or I shouldn't say they found out, but reported on, Zoe, which really, really kind of blows my mind and not really, is that, you know, some of the original people like Sibley and Alexander Ramsey, the first governors, were really part of this land grab and treaty balking that the university, that I've heard rumblings about over the years, but here it is in a report, Zoe.
Yeah, and just to clarify for listeners too, you know, we use the term land grab, which is, I believe, the more correct term. But a lot of universities and, you know, textbooks and things would say land grant, like a gift almost. It's just this really tricky, slight change of language around it, but I think it's really important. And the Truth Project does call attention to that because, you know, as we see with settler colonialism so much in our community and the way it's affected us is the U.S. government or the powers that be using language to kind of avoid accountability for the harms that they've committed towards our communities. So this is one iteration of that. And the land grab universities were part of the Morrill Acts of 1862 and 1890. And so those were created to give colleges or educational institutions land to create, you know, educational institutions and especially agricultural colleges. So the U of M is a university that greatly benefited from this. I think the Truth Project said that they mapped over 186,709 acres of land that Congress granted Minnesota between 1851 and 1868 through the Morrill Acts. So that is a lot of land. And we've talked previously, Robert, you know, about Fond du Lac starting to receive some of that land back. But honestly, it all needs to go back. I mean, that is so many acres of land. And especially thinking about our communities, and I just always think about our relatives, obviously in the Twin Cities, our unhoused relatives who do not have anything. And then also our relatives up north who live in rural areas, and live in, you know, subsidized housing that is not built well, you know, and right. So this is pretty incredible that they were able to come out with this report.
Well, listen to the part of this report, too. I'm reading here. For Red Lake Nation in northwest Minnesota, Goodwin explored the history of medical research that was conducted by the University of Minnesota doctors on young Red Lake children in the 60s. So that's within my lifetime.
that's not long ago at all. And not to mention all of the, you know, there's so much experimentation on black and brown bodies, but that is just really, that's really hard to hear. And I know that, remind me of her name, Robert, the young woman who did the research, was one of the research assistants.
Miss Goodwin, from Red Lake. Miss Goodwin, and I want to say Adriana Goodwin. And I've seen her do a presentation on this and wanted to get her on the show, but I think she was waiting for this report to come out before she was willing to come on. So we're going to probably reach out to her. But this is interesting. Just in the last couple of weeks, Zoe, we've covered the genocide of Ho-Chunk people being removed here by almost the same actors that we're talking about, Alexander Ramsey and Sibley, who you know, are probably heroes to some people in the state of Minnesota because of all the things that they put up and, you know, all these good things they did, supposedly. And but how they got there is what's eking out right now. And what blows my mind, too, Zoe, is that it's 2023 and we're just learning this stuff.
Right, right. And, you know, many Native people, most of us have known this forever or are known of this for a very long time. But it's also definitely true that our communities, due to not having enough access to higher education, don't know these histories. I think that was one of the biggest things I really came to terms with in my 4 years at McAllister, was that I had to go to this school that's like 70K to go to just to learn the history about my own people. So yeah, lots of points raised in this report.
Well, let's keep on top of this. This is really interesting, and maybe reach out to Shannon Gieshek or somebody from Red Lake. This is such important work that our Natives are doing, and it's sad but good that it's done by a Native warrior. It's a kind of a double-edged sword for me because it would be great to have this in our history books, but we have to do our own research and bring these points up, Zoe. So up next... we got Connie Walker, really excited. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by, stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Students at participating Twin Cities high schools can get a summer's worth of rides on buses and light rail for just $30 with a summer student pass. From June 1st through September 5th, students can get unlimited rides on buses and trains up to a $3.25 fare. For a list of participating schools and to purchase a pass, visit metrotransit.org/summer-student-pass. Again, that's metrotransit.org/summer-student-pass.
ATN FAM 950, St. Louis Park, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Life is a journey, and the Doherty Family College at the University of St. Thomas will help you get where you want to go. Located in downtown Minneapolis, this affordable two-year college provides free textbooks, a laptop, meals, career coaches, and a Metro Transit pass, making DFC the perfect pathway to a bachelor's degree. Turn your dreams into reality at Doherty Family College at the University of St. Thomas. Apply today at dfc.stthomas.edu.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Yes, they are. Hey, we're here and so excited to have Connie Walker, who's an investigative journalist and one of my favorite podcasters out there. Welcome, Connie. Thank you so, so much for coming in. I know a lot of people are excited to hear, will be excited to hear this broadcast tonight.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I'm glad it worked out.
Well, I heard about you, and I mentioned to you this a little bit, is that our state senator who before she was a state senator, was a media specialist in a school. So she's all about books and podcasts and things. And she recommended this, your original Finding Cleo podcast to me and to our audience. And I could not put it down. And being an adoptee, it was very emotional for me to see how this just affected everybody, from the older brother to the mother, and how she triumphed in her later age. But just the sadness that I felt that we find from, you know, part of the murdered, missing Indigenous people. Missing people is our adoptees, I feel like.
Mm. Yeah, no, I have heard that quite a lot, just from other people who were part of the 60s group in Canada, or who were adopted out in the U.S. Just, you know, I think that that's kind of one of the things I love about storytelling and about doing these kind of deep dives and podcasts, is how the power of storytelling has an ability to connect us. And I think that for so many Indigenous people, you know, it's really harmful not to see yourself represented in media, not to see yourself represented in stories. And so, you know, with first Missing and Murdered and now Stolen, with those podcasts, it's just been incredible to see how much these deep dives, these really in-depth stories, and this investigative journalism can connect us across nations and across generations. Because, you know, I think that in we have this shared experience of colonization, and there's something that we can all relate to in those stories.
Yeah, definitely. Before we get into your latest podcast, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's, I'd like to just get a little background on you, and what got you going on this, and not so much as a journalist and transitioning into a podcast, and how did you get going?
Well, I was at the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, for about 20 years. And most of that time was as like a reporter in the news service. And so, you know, for a long time, there just was very little interest in hearing any stories from Indigenous people and communities. And that started to change. And where we really found like a connection I think the reason why that there was little interest in stories was because there was this belief that people didn't care. People didn't think our stories mattered. People didn't think they were important. And then when we started to shift to digital media, we created this hub at CBC called CBC Aboriginal at the time. It's now called CBC Indigenous, but it was like our way to funnel all the Indigenous stories that were happening across the country that CBC was reporting on into one space. And it was this digital space. And for the first time, we actually had proof that there was like a large, not just an audience interested in our stories, but a large audience interested in our stories. And we were able to connect with people in really new and exciting ways. And I think that, you know, for me as a journalist, that was so energizing. And I could see the potential. I could see how, you know, there was this opportunity to continue to build and grow on that. But the challenge that we had at CBC News was that we were still so focused on TV and radio. And I love radio, and I worked in TV for many years. But it felt like our window was shrinking. It was getting harder and harder and harder to tell stories, and the actual time we had to tell them was shrinking down to like minutes and seconds, really. And I had started listening to podcasting, and one of the first stories about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls that I reported on for TV, I remember this frustration I had when the story was over. Like, I was grateful that we were able to highlight her story, and it was on the national newscast, and there was a big web feature. But I remember feeling like there was so much of her life and so much of her community and so many things that I knew were connected to her story, but that we weren't able to include. We weren't able to connect the dots in such a short amount of time with the limited space that we had. And that was the first time we thought about doing a podcast. And then the next story that we did, you know, again, it was supposed to be a 2-minute news story. And we were out there and we were supposed to be gone for a couple of days. It turned into like over a week and flying to Northern British Columbia to investigate the unsolved murder of Alberta Williams. And I remember my producer Marnie being like, so when are we thinking of launching this? And she was thinking, and it was April, she was thinking of a matter of weeks, you know, like when could we publish this story? And I said, I'm thinking of a fall launch. Like, I think we could do a podcast. And we basically were able to convince our bosses and managers at CBC to let us try to do a podcast. And that's one thing that I'm so grateful to CBC for, honestly, is just the ability to be supported to experiment, to try new things, because I did a lot of new things at CBC. And from the get-go, I loved it. It was a lot harder. We had no idea what we were doing. It was extremely stressful. But it was a way that we could finally connect the dots and help people understand how a single woman or girl who was missing or murdered was connected to this bigger history, this bigger story of colonization and how it's impacted our communities and our lives that hadn't been told before, that had been ignored. And I think using the incredible tools that you have with a serialized narrative podcast was really perfect, I think, in terms of diving into these communities and these stories.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, we're here with Connie Walker. Her latest project is Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's. Let's talk a little bit about that. Let's jump into that, because what is striking is that you told the story, finding Cleo, about this family, and now this this got personal, your next story. And so when you're creating, and you have a feeling, and it's got to be difficult to tell a story without really getting really emotionally wrapped up into it. And I think having your father and his history, and I don't want to give too much away, but that had to be a hard project to jump into for many reasons.
Yeah, it was extremely, extremely difficult for sure. But I think that we were talking before about the previous podcast that I have done. So I've done four seasons now, like a story about Alberta Williams, Cleo Semaginis, Jermaine Charlot, and then Surviving St. Michael's about my father. But in each of these previous seasons, like I was emotionally invested in all of those. I was wrapped up in all of them in a deeply emotional way, because, you know, I there were so many things in each of their stories that I related to, that I could see were connected to my community and my family. And I think that that's part of why I want to do this, is like this shared experience that we have as Indigenous people, whether you're in Canada or the United States, is so important to find those connections. And so I was always, you know, invested emotionally in the previous podcast, but it was really different taking on a story about my dad. But as soon as I heard that story from my brother, you know, I knew that I couldn't put it away. Like, I was like, it didn't really honestly feel like an option to like move on and do something else. Like I felt like I had seen the power of storytelling, I think, in terms of healing from trauma in the previous podcast that I had done. And I've also been studying trauma and learning about post-traumatic stress disorder, and how one of the most successful therapies is this therapy called exposure therapy, where like so much of your life you're trying to hide from your trauma or ignore it or not think about it. And you do so, like you spend so much time and effort and energy and distracting yourself from thinking about this terrible thing. And that's totally understandable. And I did that for so long. But it wasn't until I decided to shine a spotlight on it, on some of that, and expose it, that I was really able to process it and to move on from it. And it feels like doing the podcast was a version of that, you know, for me and my family.
Hey, we got to take a quick break here in about 35 seconds. Let's let everybody out there know where and how we can listen to these podcasts. I know, because there's a certain way to do that. Connie, can you let our audience know?
Sure. Well, Stolen Surviving St. Michael's and Stolen the Search for Jermaine are only available on Spotify. You don't need to have to pay for it. You can listen to it for free on Spotify or on the Gimlet website. And Missing and Murdered, Finding Cleo, and Missing and Murdered, Who Killed Alberta Williams are available anywhere that you get your podcasts.
Wow. Thanks, Connie. We're here with Connie. We got another segment with Connie. We're with Connie Walker, and we're talking about her latest project, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's, and also about Finding Cleo and about a lot of things. We are so excited to have you on. We'll be right.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. A jury found Idaho mom Lori Vallow Daybell guilty on all counts, including murdering her two children. Grandfather Larry Woodcock thanked jurors.
What they went through, what they saw, is mind-boggling.
Title 42 ended at midnight, prompting more migrants to head to the southern border. KCAL TV's Michelle Gila reports from San Diego.
Volunteers are delivering blankets and more food, like granola bars and crackers, which will be distributed to hundreds of asylum seekers who are waiting on U.S. soil for Border Patrol agents to process their cases.
The Marine veteran accused of using a fatal chokehold on New York City subway passenger Jordan Neely made his first court appearance. Attorney Dante Mills represents the Neely family.
Mr. Neely did not attack anyone. He did not touch anyone. He did not hit anyone. But he was choked to death.
CBS News Brief. I'm Wendy Gillette.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
Enter a world of wizards, hobbits, and gnomes at the Gift Nook in Kewaskum. Explore an enchanted land with locally made handcrafted gifts themed from nerdy to nature, and experience an interactive hobbit home. Visit the Gift Nook for a truly mystical shopping experience. 222 Main Street in Kewaskum, or call 414-839-0066. That's 414-839-0066, or find them on Facebook and Instagram.
Tens of thousands of Wisconsinites live with a debilitating chronic disease called lupus. Build awareness and raise funds by challenging your friends and family to register today for the 21st annual Walk to End Lupus Now Milwaukee. The walk will take place on the morning of May 13th at beautiful Hoyt Park in Wauwatosa. Adult registration is just $30 and children under 15 are $20. Prices will increase after May 10th, so make sure you sign up now. To pre-register, go to lupuswi.org or call 414-443-6400.
Are record high energy and water costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes? With inflation rising at record levels and incomes not keeping pace, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive. While you may not ask for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to be without heat, water, or power. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.heat.help. That's
documentary, podcast, kind of a murder mystery too. And I've been telling everybody that ever wants to listen to me to listen to that show. And then also the new newer one, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's. I'm just tongue-tied here, Connie. I just, that's why don't we talk a little bit about Stolen? And what the really grabbed me and hooked me was the story about your father being a police officer for a year and what happened during that. And if you want to tell our audience a little bit about that story and kind of what perked your whole interest in this.
Yeah. I mean, I was literally like, it was May of 2021 and I was literally just scrolling through Facebook one evening and I came across a post that my brother had written. And it was a post about my dad, about our dad. And my brother said that when my dad was a police officer in the late 1970s, he was stationed in rural Saskatchewan. He was a special constable with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And he was on patrol one night and he saw a vehicle kind of swerving in the distance and he thought the driver might've been drinking. So he pulled it over. And when he got to the driver's side window, he realized that he recognized the driver, that it was a priest who had abused him when he was at residential school. And my brother in this post said that my dad beat up that priest that night on the side of the road and then, you know, expected there to be some repercussions, to get in trouble, for there to be a complaint to be made, but nothing ever happened. And it just became this story that he shared. And when I read it on Facebook, like I can still remember the feeling I had of just like a punch in the gut, because I knew my dad had gone to a residential school. But I really, that's all I knew. I didn't know where he went or for how long or anything about his experience. And this revelation that he had been sexually abused by a priest there, it really shook me, you know. It made me really, immediately understand my dad in a new way. But also it was just haunting, you know, it was just devastating to learn that, but it helped me make sense of my childhood a little bit, because my father, you know, when I was a kid, he struggled a lot. He drank a lot and he was very abusive and violent. And that really like affected our relationship my whole life. And he passed away about 10 years ago now. And I think I had always thought that maybe I would, you know, I would take the time to reconcile or learn more about him. But I never had the chance to do that. And when I heard this story from my brother about his experience at this school, it felt like I had an opportunity to do that. And so I decided to try to find out more about my dad's experience at this residential school. I discovered he went to the St. Michael's Indian Residential School. And I also decided that I wanted to try to find the priest who abused him.
And what I thought was really powerful too, you talked to his siblings too, and they knew all about it. And all these traumatic things that we keep inside and don't talk about must have been healing for them in some sense.
I hope so. Honestly, I hope so. Like, I'm still in awe of the generosity of my aunts and uncles, my dad's brothers and sisters, who opened up and shared with me, because my dad was one of 16 siblings to go to St. Michael's. Like, you know, he and all his brothers and sisters went there. He went when he was 6 years old, a native Cree speaker, didn't speak any English. You know, in Canada, there's this terrible history of residential schools. They were open for over 100 years. There were over 100 across the country. I know it's a similar story in the U.S. in terms of boarding schools, but the goal, I think, was very similar on both sides of the border. And it was assimilation, like to assimilate Indigenous people, to take children deliberately away from their families and parents and communities and deprive them of their language and culture and try to assimilate them. And so many people had an experience like my father of being deeply traumatized by that abuse, by that attempted genocide. And so many people experienced sexual abuse. And when we started looking, you know, started asking questions, you know, I was really unsure if my aunts and uncles would want to talk about it. You know, my dad, like I never, like I said, I never talked about it with him. So many people in both sides of my families had an experience at residential school that we just never spoke about or talked about. And I was just so amazed at how open my aunts and uncles were and how they did want to talk about it. And they shared so much with me. And I know that part of that was them wanting me to know my dad in a way that they knew him and to understand him. And I still feel so emotional about that, honestly, because that's such a gift that they gave me in helping me understand my dad and about what they all went through. But I hope it also was a positive experience for them to maybe tell some of their story and share some of their story in a space where they were respected and they had space and agency in terms of how much they wanted to share and what they wanted to share. So I'm just so grateful to them for that.
You know, we have a question here of what are your core values that lead in your work? And I think you're really, really dancing on that. Can you speak a little deeper in that? Because, you know, I talk about this a lot on our show that we've kind of lost a couple generations. And I, being a former high school teacher, am really excited to see our Gen Zs really pick up the mantle and do things that we never did. You know, in 1978, up till 1978, when I was a junior in high school, we couldn't pray our own way, you know? And so there's all these things that I feel like you're picking up and you know, moving the curtain aside so people can see really what's happened to our Indigenous communities over the years. So what do you feel like how your core values fit into your work?
I feel like it's my core values inform everything about my work, honestly. Like, you know, I grew up on my reserve with my family. You know, I come from an incredible family. Both my grandparents on my mom's side were residential school survivors. My grandma actually ran away from the residential school she was sent to. And it was in another province. Like, so she and a friend ran away and made it home, and she never went back to school after that. But the thing that's so incredible about my grandmother is that, you know, she grew up in rural Saskatchewan, which is especially back then, I think, just so racist in terms of its treatment towards Indigenous people. And she just never backed down from anyone. Like, she was my favorite story about her is that, like, you know, you'd go into the cafe in town and people would stare at you if you came in and you were Native. And that she said that, you know, she would, or my mom told me that she would look at people would be staring at them and she would look at them and say, boo. Like, she was not frightened at all. And she would not back down. And I feel like just having the gift of like, they helped raise me, both my grandparents, just having that instilled in you from the time you were a kid, that you know, we're proud of our family. Our family is the most important thing. Like, this strong sense of not just love of your family, but responsibility to your family and to your community. And I feel like that's something that I take, you know, I take with me wherever I go, and I'm trying to pass on to my child as well. And I mean, I just think that all of my experience as an Indigenous woman has informed everything that I'm bringing to my work. And I think that the way that I try to bring that into work is like the respect that we give people in the communities that we meet and the space we try to create for them.
You know, we're talking with Connie Walker and her latest project, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's, that you can hear exclusively on Spotify. Do you have a question, Zoe? I don't know if you have your hand raised there or I'm hallucinating.
Yes, I do. Okay. It's kind of a two-parter, Connie, but you spoke earlier about a little bit about the power of story. And I was just wondering, you know, you touched on a little bit of the impact that sharing the story has had within your family. But I was just wondering if you could share a little bit about the reception you've had for, like, most of your podcasting work, since you are exposing some really deep-seated and harmful truths, but really important things to share. And then, and I can remind you of this after you finish, but the second question was just, what advice do you have for anybody, you know, trying to do this work or just trying to shed some light on some really painful things happening in their own community or within their family? So, yeah, those are my questions. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for those questions. I mean, I've been blown away by the reception of the podcast. You know, I was really, really concerned about, obviously, not just audience reaction, but specifically my family, right? You know, because this is something that I feel like was so sensitive for all of us. And it's like, it's just been, they've been so supportive. And I heard from, like, you know, I obviously come from a big family. My dad is one of 16 kids on Beardies, and I have so many first cousins. I probably couldn't even name them all. but I heard from so many of our family members who said that, you know, they felt like this was their story about them and their dad, and I, not just my family. I heard that from other people as well, and I think that we try to hold these things close because they're painful and because they're so difficult. And it's a totally understandable reaction to want to have that fear, to expose them. But I feel like it's been such a healing thing for me to have things be exposed and to shine a light and to kind of let go of any of the stigma or shame that's associated with those intergenerational effects of residential schools and colonization. And if you're somebody who's thinking of taking on a personal story or who's thinking of talking about these really difficult issues, like I, you know, first want to just empathize with you because I know that that's hard. I know it's difficult work. And I was really, I think I have been lucky to have such a supportive, a network of family and friends, but then also colleagues, like people who share in the work with me. And surviving St. Michael's was such a personal story, but it was 100% a team effort and it was actually the first time where I got to work with other Indigenous journalists on the podcast, because most of my career, I you know, there were other Indigenous journalists obviously working alongside, but I'd never worked with an Indigenous producer before, and that was really integral. So I think if you can find supportive people and allies, that's so important and crucial. But also, you know, I really believe that the power of storytelling and the power, if you have control and if you have agency and if you're given respect to share your story, that can be a really important healing tool. And I've seen it. I've seen it, you know, in finding Cleo. Like it was a lesson for me in terms of the way that Johnny and Christine walk through that story in the way that they did. Honestly, like I was in awe of them the whole time. And then, but I also could see, like, I remember being so worried about them and being worried that, you know, they were going to be so exposed to an audience that was going to weigh in on their actual lives. Wow. But they were willing to engage, and it was just incredible to see how powerful they were through that experience. And that was an inspiration for me as well.
Well, Connie, we're going to wrap this up. We know time's tight for everybody here. And I just want to say we're with Connie Walker, and we're talking about her latest project, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's. You can see exclusively on and listen to exclusively on Spotify. I just want to end with one more question here. And is there anything you would like to say to our audience before we wrap up?
I mean, I'm just so grateful to you guys for making this show and for making space for these really important conversations and trying to highlight all the incredible work that's being done, you know, across North America. It's just, I feel like this is such an exciting time for Indigenous people to be supported in sharing our stories and raising our voices. And I'm inspired, like, you know, every day by all of the incredible people out there like you guys who are doing this work. So thank you very much.
And we are too. And that's been the opportunity I've had here for 7 years on Native Roots Radio, is to see people like yourself doing the work and really doing it well. And yeah, just really happy that you were able to come on. We were with Connie Walker. I just want to say, Pinagigi, thank you. Her latest project, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's, on Spotify. So we really appreciate you, Connie. Thank you so much, Zoe. Thank you for setting this up. And thank you, Jamie. We'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
When it comes to mental health, making connections with others can be a way forward. How do you reach out when you need someone? What do you do to support those who struggle? Connections can bring comfort, hope, and joy. Find ways that work for yourself and others, like sending a text, sharing a moment, offering a hug, seeing an old friend, creating space to listen. Visit cmentalhealth.org. That's cmentalhealth.org. cmentalhealth.org.
AM 950 KTNF St. Louis Park, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Students at participating Twin Cities high schools can get a summer's worth of rides on buses and light rail for just $30 with a summer student pass. From June 1st through September 5th, students can get unlimited rides on buses and trains up to a $3.25 fare. For a list of participating schools and to purchase a pass, visit metrotransit.org/summer-student-pass. Again, that's metrotransit.org/summer-student-pass.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm here with Zoe Allen.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Oh, good one. Wow, what an awesome show. Really, we're excited to have Connie Walker on and talk about the documentaries and her work up there. And again, I just want to say her latest project was Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's. And it's an in-depth story about her father and what he went through. And I don't know. I really felt so much genuine good vibes, Zoe, from Connie today. Very appreciative of our work and what's going on, but really, you know, we're just here to amplify others. And what did you take from the interview, take away with?
I just think Connie is one of the people doing the work that doesn't need you know, the kind of like fame and all of the acclaim that comes with it. She's really doing it for the community. And I think it's really important that in this moment, we really turn and give platform and hear from the people that are doing that work, that are doing it humbly. And like she talked about, you know, her values are everything. Like her core values are at the part of everything she does. And so I think it's just really, it's really great seeing somebody that is as successful as she is with her journalistic work. That's also just still staying so true to her community, because it's very easy to get your head, you know, stuck up in the clouds and chase the money and kind of lose sight of what our communities really need. So I think, yeah, that was one of the biggest things of just the type of person that she is. And it, her work speaks for itself. Like, you know, you can listen to, you know, you listen to the interview and she's a really great person, but also just listening to her podcast, you can see that she walks the walk and talks the talk, you know.
There's so many people, Zoe, that I've told they should listen to Finding Cleo. And it's, I believe it's 10 hours or 12 hours, and it's definitely worth it. And I've turned people onto it, and they've, you know, everybody, I mean, there's that big murder mystery kind of podcast people are into, and I've told people about this, and they've been really impressed. And I think also there's a lot of history plugged into what Finding Cleo had done. In other words, just like surviving St. Michael's. But that's one of the things that I really appreciate is when, especially Connie, what Connie did was put our Native history and how it parallels with what, you know, Cleo was going through, or Cleo's family, or what her father was going through during surviving St. Michael's. I appreciate that, and I learn, and I remember, you know, some things that I might have forgot about history and genocide and boarding schools and adoption and ICWA and all these things that we still deal with.
Right, right. No, I think, and she has, just for listeners to understand, she has 2 seasons of Stolen on Spotify, and then 2 seasons of Missing and Murdered. One is on Finding Cleo, and then the other is on another case. And those, the Missing and Murdered podcast, you can find those anywhere, but the Stolen series is only on Spotify. But yeah, no, I think it's a really big testament to, you know, connecting an individual story to a broader issue, because they talk about it all the time. MMIW, our work is that our women, our children, and our men, they become numbers, and then we don't have their stories. We don't see their faces and think of all the lives that they had lived before that moment. And so it is, I think, super imperative that people constantly realign themselves to realize that these are families, these are people whose lives were stolen way too early, and that this isn't just a story to be sensationalized or glorified, because that happens so often in the true crime community. Like, so many stories have been commodified and glorified for Hollywood's benefit, and it's really disparaging to see that, because it's really disrespectful to the victims and their families.
Wow. 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 Great points. Great points, Zoe. Well, we got less than a minute left here. And again, it was great to have Connie on. We also talked a little about the University of Minnesota. That we'll probably dig in deeper and get a couple guests on and talk about that, because that's in our backyard. And that's, again, it's 2023, and we're talking about these things that happened not that long ago, but should have been taken care of a long time ago. So it's kind of one of those things.
Yeah. And I just wanted to put this graphic up in our last couple of seconds here, just for people to understand. I put it up in the first segment, but you may not be able to read it all the way, but you can at least see how many dots are on the map of these are land grab universities. So all of these universities have land that, of course, was indigenous land and was taken from their respective communities and given to institutions of higher learning. And, you know, they did with them what they wanted to. So that's what we're talking about. And I hope that we're going to continue to see this trend of returning land to indigenous people.
Right on. Hey, Pinigigi, Zoe, for all the work you've done today and for Native Roots Radio and for our community. I really appreciate it. If you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance from Chief Plenty Coops. The ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. We're still here. We're the 7th generation. Free Leonard Peltier now.
Attention all curious, holistic...
Feeling down, anxious, depressed? You are not alone. According to the World Health Organization, approximately 280 million people have depression, but the majority never receive treatment. At WellPoint Care Network, they can help. Their outpatient clinic staff are both qualified and caring, not to mention highly trained in partnering with you on your healing journey. Make an appointment today at wellpointcare.org. They serve all ages, infants, children, and adults. Both in-person and virtual services are available. Learn more at wellpointcare.org.
Real Chili's been serving up mouthwatering goodness to the people of Milwaukee since 1931. Their famous secret award-winning chili recipe is the same as it was back then and a local treasure. From lunch to dinner to late-night breakfast, Real Chili has you covered. And now you can bring the Real Chili to your next party, tailgate, wedding, or office gathering with their unbeatable catering options. And don't forget about their Real Love Party Packs, perfect for small groups and pick up from their two convenient locations, downtown Milwaukee and near Marquette University campus. Visit them at realchili.com. That's realchili.com.